Okay, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. So every 20 episodes, we do an episode, which is a Q&A. So essentially, you guys ask me questions on the Into the Mind channel, the Into the Mind TikTok, Into the Mind Instagram, and also my personal Instagram, which is HP Life Lens, and also the Chisholm Hunter Watches Instagram, which is run by me, but is also our sponsors. So I've kind of compiled all the questions that you guys had, or as many as I could physically fit in the time that we have, and I'm going to crack through them. We start. If you do enjoy these podcasts, please consider hitting that subscribe button. It honestly helps more than you can ever know. And the more of you guys that subscribe and all that kind of stuff, the more amazing guests we can get on. And I truly, just from the bottom of my heart, want to thank you guys for all the support over the last year. It's been really quite amazing. What started as like a hobby pretty much has turned into so much more than that. And that's all thanks to you guys. So thank you guys so much. Okay, so let's just quickly crack on with question one, which is dream guest ? Or top three dream guests and why? I think that when I was growing up, there was definitely lots of inspirations there. I think that I have different fingers in a lot of different pies. So I take inspiration from a lot of different places. I suppose when it comes back to my base, which is photography and videography, I think Sam Calder and Peter McKinnon are incredible at what they do and definitely were an inspiration for me growing up. However, when it comes to the business side of things, I think my dad's definitely a big influence there. I think he's an incredible man. His moral compass is great and he's a very good businessman. I also think that the likes of Elon Musk would be a really fun person to have in a podcast just to ask him about anything because he's one of the most intelligent, unbelievably smart people on the planet. So yeah, I think that having like a cool mix would be awesome in that circumstance. Maybe like Elon Musk, Sam Calder, Peter McKinnon, and maybe bring in a watch guy as well because I'm obsessed with watches. Maybe Adrian Barker. I think that would be a cool room to come into, and I think that would be a really cool conversation. It's like three totally different walks of life coming together and sharing their views, and I love that side of things. So yeah, they're definitely inspirations to me when I was growing up, and they're definitely kind of in the dream guest realm, I would say. Okay, I actually know the person that's asked the next question. So were you creative before you had ADHD, or did you try after? I don't think, would I define myself as creative? Yeah, I suppose I am. I think that everyone is creative to an extent, but a lot of people shy away from it because of fear of what other people will say. I think that I maybe had a little bit more confidence to walk away from old friend groups and anyone that got in the way of what I wanted to do. And I think that that then led to more creativity because I had more freedom to express myself in different ways and not feel like I was being judged. So I think that a lot of it is who you surround yourself with and who you let influence you. You know, if somebody is telling you not to do something that you love to do, the odds are they're probably not your friend. So I would definitely bear that in mind, whatever you want to do in life. I do think that a lot of it comes down to your friend group. And if you have a really supportive small friend group, it's a lot better than having a larger friend group that isn't supportive. I mean, I've spoken to so many people on the podcast that kind of had the same thing as me, where they had this big friend group that weren't really friends. They were more like drinking colleagues. And those drinking colleagues felt better that you were out with them because then they weren't drinking alone. And a lot of the time, people that drink and go to bars and pubs and clubs all the time are actually the loneliest people. So I think a lot of it is who you surround yourself with. I suppose in my field now, photography and videography and YouTube and watches, I wouldn't label myself as creative, but I definitely have a more creative outlook on stuff. But it's purely because I don't have fear of being judged as much as maybe other people would. So yeah, I think it's a lot of it is who you surround yourself with. And I think that you need a creative outlet in life, whether that's art or drawing or photography or YouTube or reviews, whatever it might be, having that creative outlet allows you to kind of go into autopilot. It allows you to totally immerse yourself in a project. And I think that's really good for your mental health. So from a young age, I definitely had more of an eye for that. And that's purely because I enjoyed it. I think with ADHD, I found it very, very difficult to focus on things that I didn't care about. And a lot of the time in school, I just didn't care about the projects that they were giving me. You know, higher maths, which I've not used to this day, was not my thing. However, I did enjoy the more creative side of things like photography and videography. Also, when I was growing up, I went to a really nice school. It's called the Glasgow Academy. It's a private school, and I'm very, very lucky to have gone there. But they definitely had statistics that they wanted to hit. And I specifically remember a couple of examples where they would get like a leaderboard of the school up on the screen in assembly. And anyone that was performing below the standard, they were essentially saying that you're going to fail in life. If you're not going to become a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to fail. And I hated that mentality. And a lot of things you can just learn online now. Like, you don't need a degree to become a photographer. You don't need a degree to become a YouTuber. You don't need a degree to do various different things. So I think that the system, the university system and the schooling system, is kind of fundamentally flawed in a lot of ways now. And it's maybe not as important as it used to be. With that said, you definitely don't want an unqualified doctor. So there's kind of levels to it. But, you know, a lot of my friends that went to university to study photography, for an example, they are asking me for advice. So I don't think university is the be all and end all. And I'm not putting myself like in a pedestal here, but I think that experience outweighs the degree a lot of the time. You know, you'd much rather have work experience than you would the degree, in my opinion. So that's not always the kind of be all and end all. Anyway, I've gone off on a total tangent. So being comfortable on camera, how, is the next question. I think it just takes a long time. It's a bit like going to the gym to build your muscles. You know, you might go to the gym once and do bicep curls. It doesn't mean you're going to get bigger biceps. It's the consistency of going there every night or every couple of nights. And then through time, your biceps will eventually grow. It's the same as being on camera. I'm a very anxious person personally. So it took me a very long time to get kind of comfortable in front of a camera. So I do think just by repetition and doing it again and again and again, and also editing your footage, can be really beneficial in terms of seeing where you should have paused or seeing where you should have taken a breath, seeing where you should have slowed down or sped up. And that reaffirmation can then result in looking more comfortable in front of a camera. A camera is always kind of like a weird thing. And I say this to all the podcast guests that come in. You're never going to be totally comfortable in front of a camera because it is like you're being watched by like just this one big eye in front of me. So it's always a little bit strange. But it is through that repetition that you get comfortable with it. And trust me, the first few videos, if you're wanting to film videos, are not going to be good. But that's how you learn. You know, you post them, you get feedback. You post them, you get feedback. You post them, you get feedback. And even to this day, I get feedback about my videos. And I amend based on the feedback. Because a lot of the time, the feedback that you're receiving is correct. And the feedback that normally hurts you the most, that normally cuts to your core, is true, and that's why it cuts to your core. So I do believe it's just repetition. It's a bit like any exercise you'll do, just keep doing it, persist, and eventually it pays off. I think that the only real indicator of success in life is persistence, because if you're persistent, you might just succeed. You might just get there, but if you're not persistent, you definitely will fail, because you'll quit. So I think that if you're persistent, you'll get there. If you're not, then it won't happen. Right, so the next question is, how did you get into watches? I got into watches at quite a young age. I'm gonna say I was maybe 14 or 15 when I started looking into watches. And then I started work when I was quite young. So I never went to university. So essentially in Scotland, they have a university system which sits just above college. College is like an extension of school pretty much, because it's like the people that don't go to university get into college, and college gives you the gateway to get into university. So I went to college because I didn't get into university because I failed most of my exams in school. And in college, I did sports science for like 5 or 6 months before dropping out. So I never got any degrees. So because of that, I went straight into work. And I went straight into work when I was like, I'm going to say like 15 or 16, maybe just turned 16 is when I started. And I started work at Chisholm Hunter, who are the sponsors of the podcast. Shout out to Chisholm Hunter. If you want your diamonds or jewelry, you know where to go. Or your watches, of course. And because I was kind of immersed in watches and I had an interest prior to starting work at Chisholm Hunter, they just kind of went hand in hand. And then, of course, because I was still living at home at that age and I was earning money, it gave me the grounds to start buying luxury watches. And then my first watch ever was a Oris Artelier skeleton watch when I was like maybe 17. And that was given to me from my parents, which was incredible. And that really started the the obsession. And ever since then, I then got involved in all the forums and all the Instagram pages and YouTube pages and watched all the YouTubers and started getting really into the horology aspect of watchmaking. I was kind of fascinated by the movements, the engines behind these watches, how some of them were different to others, how they were different to others, why they were different to others, how some of them had tourbillon movements, some of them had, you know, minute repeaters, you know, that all these incredible innovations that have come and been sort of inserted into the watch industry. I love that. And it's an ever-changing landscape. But what I love about watches specifically is the fact that they don't really age. Like, fashion moves very fast. This jacket might not be in fashion in a year's time. Actually, it probably won't be in fashion in a year's time. But watches, it's very subjective. This watch on my wrist at the moment, I've actually had for maybe 7 years. And it's now kind of classed as more vintage. And it's not like it went out of fashion. Because it was discontinued, it got more rare and more people wanted it. And I just love the long-lasting impact that watches can have. And also, I link watches to a lot of memories. You know, when I do a big project, I might get a watch. Or if I have a big achievement, I might get a watch. Or that's what watches mean to me. They're about memories and the memories you attach to them. Okay, so next up, what watch are you wearing right now? So the watch that I'm wearing right now is the Tudor Black Bay ETA. This one is more of a vintage watch now because of the age of it. And specifically, what's interesting about this one is that the Tudor actually used an ETA movement, which is like a mass-produced movement, and they put it in the Black Bay case. Now Tudor don't produce any out-of-house movements. They're all in-house. So they slotted this movement into this case, and it makes it a little bit thinner than the Black Bay that they have now because it's an ETA movement. And it also means that it has a little bit of like different features to the normal Black Bays. So on the face of this watch, you have kind of like a smiley self-winding text. So it's kind of curved upwards for any of those listeners. And that's different to the classic Tudor Black Bays now. And also it has a rose on it instead of the shield. So Tudor changed their logo, or were more strong in their logo of a shield rather than a rose. So it's like a different logo. So these tiny little details in the watch industry, because we are all quite nerdy, they mean a lot. So everyone gets quite obsessed over these little details, and it's really cool. And the fact that you can start a conversation with someone that can point out the little details that are different in your watch to other watches, and then become genuine friends with them over a connecting hobby, I love that side of things. I think that a lot of anxieties nowadays are the kind of first impact anxiety. How do I say hi to this person without creeping them out? How do I say hi to that person without messaging them beforehand on Instagram? And for me, that's always been an issue. So having a common passion, it kind of breaks the ice that little bit more. Like, I can't tell you how many people that I've met that the first point of call is, what watch you got on the wrist? And then after that, we start talking about family. And then after that, we start talking about the job. And then after that, you become great friends with them. And also, a lot of the time, you build business contacts with these people that are incredible, incredible watch enthusiasts. So yeah, the industry is awesome. The watch industry, the photography industry, the car industry, which is just, I'm not going to go there because I'm skint, but these industries are all really good for getting people together. And I think that's a lot of what the watch industry is. How do you get good guests on the podcast? I think for us, it's just having the confidence to reach out to people. I think a lot of people think that people will be maybe more cold towards them and they don't want to pitch to them, but that's kind of what you have to do when you start getting the podcast off the ground. You need to reach out to everyone and see who will do it for you. And normally what happens with podcasts is it starts within your social circle. And then through the expansion of the podcast, you need to obviously reach out elsewhere. I think a lot of the time where people fail, though, is they start a podcast and they reach episode 10 or episode 20 and they run out of people within their social circles to get on. And then all of a sudden the podcast collapses. So we try and bear in mind what is great for the guest. So if your guest is coming in and let's say they're a scientist and they've written a book, make sure that you say to the guest, we'll obviously talk about your book, because essentially they want to sell their book. So that is the reason for them coming in. People are naturally more self-absorbed. You need to understand what is in it for them in order to get them into the podcast and give their expertise. So a lot of the time it's knowing what's in it for them and having the confidence to reach out to people. For example, on my personal Instagram, which is HP Lifelens, It's a photography and videography page. I got followed by Jared Butler. So Jared Butler followed me, and I, to be honest, I don't know why he followed me, but he just did. So I messaged him straight away being like, listen, obviously a huge fan. He's a big celebrity. I know that you travel around Scotland a lot because you're obviously Scottish. If you ever want to be in the podcast, I'd be absolutely privileged to have you on. Now, given he didn't reply because he's Jared Butler, but the kind of fact of the matter is that I had the confidence to reach out to them. And if you don't ask, you don't get. And a lot of the times these people that do the podcast, they do it just out of the goodness of their own heart and try and help you. People are like naturally nice. I like to think that people are good people most of the time. We had a guy called Blair Kinghorn at the very start of this podcast. I think it was episode 2. And he's a big rugby player. He's in France at the moment. He plays for Scotland. I don't think he really understood what he did for us at the point of coming in for the podcast, but he came in episode 2. The podcast had barely any views at that time, barely any listeners. And he came in and he did us a huge favor coming in. And he's an absolutely unbelievable guy. But through having the confidence just to reach out to him, and out of the brilliant, you know, attitude of Blair, just saying like, yeah, well, why not? It gave us grounds to get more of the rugby boys in. And then we got Doohan van der Merwe, Ali Price and all the rest of it. So he did something amazing for us, but it wouldn't have happened unless we had the confidence to just reach out to him in the first place. So having confidence, being more active in terms of who you're outreaching to and not really getting deterred with rejection. There's a lot of people we message or I message or the team message in the Into the Mind podcast team that don't reply. And that's okay. If they don't want to reply, maybe now isn't the right time. So don't be afraid to reach out to people. It's not an issue if they don't reply. And if you don't get a reply, then, you know, that's fine. Move on to the next one. And a lot of the time you get guests on the podcast who become great friends after. And also we can share business ideas, business contacts. We can try and get them more promotions elsewhere through my expertise. And a lot of the time it gets the actual guest work. So they kind of are happy that it goes hand in hand and they're great guests a lot of the time. Okay, the next one is bucket list destinations you've not traveled to yet. Wow, there is literally so many. I'm very lucky. I've traveled to a lot of beautiful places for my job. Really stunning places. I've been so, so lucky. I think that Patagonia has always been very high in the bucket list. The picturesque mountains, for a landscape photographer, it is just what you want. And within the mountains, I feel at peace. That's where I diffuse. That's where all the stress and anxieties of day-to-day life kind of just exude from my mind and they're all gone. That is where I love to be. And a lot of the time I like doing it on my own because I'm a little bit weird. I'm a little bit introverted. So Patagonia is definitely up there as one of the top big hitters. Problem is it's just a pain in the ass to get to. So it definitely will happen eventually, but I'll need to save up a little bit for that. And then East Java is definitely on the hit list. Hopefully doing that next year, which is like this massive volcanic area where is it? It's in Indonesia. So it's like you fly to Bali and then you can fly to East Java or you can fly straight to Java, but I'll probably do Bali and then Java. That's definitely one that I'm really excited about. And then there's more. There's like Bolivia salt flats, Machu Picchu. I want to do that again because I didn't bring my camera. And once you become a photographer, you'll understand that you kind of realize all the places that you've been previously that you didn't have your camera and you freak out about it. That's definitely what I want to do. The Philippines is one I want to go back to. I think the Maldives looks insane. There's just so many. Life is so beautiful. The countries that you can go to are so magical. And I would urge anybody listening to this to try and travel as much as possible. Because when you're older and you've got more issues and health becomes a bigger deal, you won't maybe be able to travel to these places. And that kind of hit me hard at the beginning of my career. You know, that's why I traveled so much when I was a bit younger, because I knew that when I get older, you know, stresses build up, commitments build up. I now have my own place, my own studio. I need to pay that off. I can't just take 3 weeks off of work to go travel Southeast Asia. Now it doesn't really work like that. So I think when you're younger, it's really important to try and travel as much as possible. Okay, sticking on the photography trail, this must be from my personal Instagram. So this is your single best photography trip.go. all of them have been amazing. I think visiting Finland was so different to anything I've experienced. The frozen minus 30, literally minus 30 degree landscape in Finland was unbelievable. However, a lot of it looks quite similar. Like a lot of it's very forest and tree orientated. However, that makes you more creative when it comes to the photography side of things, which is awesome. So Finland was up there, Norway, going down to Lofoten in Norway, and Senja, doing the hikes in Senja were absolutely unbelievable. I actually remember I was in Norway it was just coming into winter. I think it must have been October, November time. And we went a hike up this mountain in Senja. And essentially it's this really steep mountain. And at the top of the mountain, you get literally a sheer drop, like a 500-600-700 meter, just sheer drop. And because it's such a vast drop, it looks awesome in terms of photography. Now, what we didn't plan for is the fact that it gets darker in Norway and wintry countries that are further north very quick. And a lot of the time you only get 5, 6, 7 hours of daylight. So we hiked up, and as we were hiking up, we could see a snowstorm coming in, but we were quite committed to getting to the top because we've already started the hike and we were traveling to a different area after that. We got to the top, start flying the drone, and this snowstorm hits. And snowstorms are amazing in terms of photography, but they're also very, very dangerous. Like you have a genuine issue there. Plus you're sitting beside a 600 meter solid drop, and the photos and videos that you want to get are right beside the solid drop. So what was kind of a good idea became a very sketchy situation. And we had to walk down really, really quickly in the dark, in this snowstorm with just drops everywhere. It was, I've done a whole vlog on it. It was really, really sketchy. But it's such an awesome memory to have. And a lot of the times when things go wrong on trips, that is what connects the group. That is what gives you the memory of that place. And I love that kind of stuff. And nothing's ever going to go right. Like every single trip I've been on, there's been something that has gone wrong. In Iceland with Alex and Matty, the first trip I went on, the car ran out of AdBlue. And that's, I didn't even know what this was. This is like a, it's like a purifier for the diesel. And I didn't even realize this was a thing. So the car runs out of AdBlue and we're in the middle of Iceland and we need to drive at 30 kilometers an hour to the next fuel stop. So we drove for 6 hours to the next fuel stop, got to the next fuel stop and it was closed. So we had to hitchhike with two random guys to get AdBlue and then come back. And that was such a brilliant memory, although it was shit at the time. Same with Norway. In Finland, the car broke down in the middle of nowhere. It just did not start. And we got help from the locals. The locals were coming over and giving us food and trying to move our car for us, trying to tow it off the road. And you kind of connect with people through a common thing that's gone wrong, something shit that's gone wrong. So yeah, I think that photography trips are all amazing. And the fact that you can connect over photography, it kind of goes back to that watch thing where it's like a common passion, a common goal, and it brings people together. And also you don't have mobile phones as much as you would. Like a mobile phone totally detaches you from speaking to people in a normal format because your brain is just in two places. So not having the phone and focusing on something with your hands, whether it's photography or watches or whatever it is, it allows you to connect deeper with the person. Like there's times that I've been in Norway and Iceland and these far north countries, and you'll be staying out until 3 a.m. looking for the northern lights, and you can't bring your phone out because the unnatural screen light from your phone will impact the camera. So you're essentially just sitting there for 6, 7 hours sometimes, just chatting about life. And that is awesome. That is what living is about. And I love that aspect of photography and video. Right, so the next one, why did you start the podcast? What was the goal? Initially, the goal for me, I was always interested in talking to people that are a lot smarter than me to strengthen my own brain and to strengthen my own mind. I definitely had an issue when I was younger and still to this day with like anxiety. I'm a very nervous person and it was more of a self-development thing. Like I wanted to speak to people and get better at speaking to people and try and subdue some of my anxieties about speaking to new people, because a lot of the time that's where my issues came from. So I think that was the start of it. It was getting over firstly my anxiety, but also learning about different stuff, learning about you know, how people compete in Ironmans and what diet they had and how it worked for them. And then also learning about like keto diets, mental health. There's, you know, we had Dr. Kieran Bong on, who specializes in like lip filler and those kind of procedures. And I find that really interesting. I'm just a very curious person. And it was kind of the backbone of that was that I wanted to get better at talking to these people and I wanted to get better at just not having as much anxiety when it comes to talking to new people. And the podcast has definitely helped in that. Like, I can see a definite upgrade in my social skills. And I think that most photographers and videographers, without generalizing, do have an issue when it comes to social skills, because a lot of the time photography and videography is on their own. And when they edit, like, I have a little room up here that I edit in, and it's pitch black, and I edit in that room by myself. So a lot of the time they don't get a lot of social contact. So it started as a strengthening exercise to my brain, and it led into a real passion. And I just love talking to people. I love getting different points of view. I love hearing what they have to say and why they have to say it. And a lot of the time I don't agree, but I think that people should be given the grounds to argue their point. You know, some people think the world is flat, and I think that is absolutely fine. I don't personally, but I think that people should have the grounds to argue their point and to have a long form conversation that isn't politicians just ripping into each other, that come to common ground. You know, I think through social media, we're being shown a mirrored room of our beliefs. And because of that, it's strengthening each side, and it's dividing each side even more, so that they don't come together and just find common ground. Everyone is a people. Everyone is a person. Everyone has common grounds. They just don't see it, and they get so aggressive about their specific, you know, points that they don't come together. You know, during COVID, you really saw a sense of community building, and people put aside their differences to come together because there was big issues going on in the world. And then all of a sudden COVID ended, and that ended for some weird reason. So I don't think that people should judge other people because they have different beliefs than they do. I just think that people should try and talk about it, you know, come to a common ground. This is my perspective. This is your perspective. I understand your perspective. And actually, now that you've told me that, I can see differently. It's not a bad thing to be wrong. And I think I've gone totally off the point, but I think that's part of the reason why I started the podcast. What scares me? Heights a lot. Yeah, heights. I don't like heights. And I've got better with heights recently because I've, as a photographer, you stand in the edge of stuff a lot of the time, just trying to get a cool shot. So I've definitely got better with heights. I think, what scares me? That's a great question. I think large social groups scare me. I get very anxious about large social groups. I don't think I have any like irrational fears. Like, I don't like the dentist, but everyone doesn't like the dentist. I don't think I have any huge fears. I think health is more of a pressing fear now because I'm getting a little bit older than it used to be. I think when you're young, you think you're indestructible. And then, you know, I get to my age and there's people that are really unfortunately getting diagnosed with cancers and with horrible, horrible diseases that you just don't, you never think that would happen to you, but it starts to happen to other people and you realize, shit, this is real. So health is definitely a more pressing issue to me now. And I think looking after myself has definitely become more of a priority now than it did in like 21, 22. I think I pushed myself really hard when I was 21, 22 to prove myself to people. And there was one specific instance when I used to get up really, really early. My kind of USP, which is unique selling point when I was starting this career, was I would get up at 2 a.m. and climb mountains in Glencoe or wherever in Scotland. And I'd get there for the sunrise. And a lot of the time the sunrise was at like 6 a.m. and it takes 2 hours to climb the mountain. So let's say I was getting up at 1 or 2 a.m, driving to Glencoe, which is 2 hours from where I stay. And then I would go up a hill or a Munro and it'd take 2 hours to get there with a big camera bag. So I was really sleep deprived. And there was one time that I came back from Norway, and in Norway, we were getting the Northern Lights. So you're up every night, you're driving for 7 or 8 hours a day. It's really heavy going. Got back from Norway after not sleeping for like a day and a half, 2 days. And the weather was going to be perfect for the next day. So I thought, you know what, fuck it. I'm just not going to sleep. And I'm going to go up to Glencoe. I went to Glencoe at 2 a.m, climbed a hill. I must've got the top, maybe 5:30, came back down, and I was so sleep deprived that I went totally into the wrong lane because I was thinking like I was in Norway, and I almost had a head-on collision with a van or a truck that would have just killed me instantly. And I had to mount the grass, and I managed to survive it. But that was a pinnacle period to me that I was like, oh fuck, this is I'm causing an issue now. Like I'm pushing myself way too hard. And actually, since I used to do so many hikes like that, I had a 25 kilo bag on the whole time. And I've actually got back damage now because I used to do all this shit with that big bag. And that, so like health becomes more of an issue when you're older. And I think the longest short of what I'm trying to say is look after yourself, because health is the tectonic plate in which everything else sits. You know, I really enjoy doing this podcast. I really enjoy filming the Chisholm Hunter YouTube channel. I really enjoy filming my own videos and photography projects and getting prints. But if my health fails, nothing else matters. The only thing that I'm interested in is getting my health back to where it should be. And I think that if you speak to someone that has a terminal illness and is going to die, that is a low tolerance for bullshit, because they can't be arsed with the fake stuff. It just doesn't appeal to them anymore, because they don't need to be fake. And I think that people should try and live as if it was their last day and try and be thankful for everything. Sometimes people can forget that, you know, your health is your wealth in a lot of ways. Again, totally off topic, so I'll move on. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self? I actually know the gentleman that's asked this question on the Chisholm Hunter Watches page. So 18-year-old me, what was I doing? I think 18-year-old me was very not confident in his own skin. I think 18-year-old me would drink to numb the social anxiety of whatever scenario I was in. I think any advice to an 18-year-old is like, firstly, it's going to be okay. When you get issues when you're 18, you think it's the end of the world. It's really not. So I think any advice to an 18-year-old will be okay. You will be fine. You will get through it. It's a shit period in your life, but it's only that. You've got a long life ahead of you. It's just a crap period. And try and be more confident. I think I think of what I was self-conscious at that age, and I'm like, why did I care? You know, like when you start getting older, you start like losing your hair and you start, you know, not having the right body type anymore and all this kind of stuff. And the stuff that I was self-conscious about then, like having a spot on my chin, like why would that actually matter? I think trying to be more confident when you're younger is a bonus. I think trying to be less anxious, of course, knowing that it's going to be fine. You know, whatever issue you're going through, it will be okay. And what else would I say to myself? I think I'd say to myself to work harder when I was younger. I think maybe when I was 18, 19, 20, I was so preoccupied with what people thought of me that I maybe didn't follow my passion as much as I should have when I was younger. Now that changed when I got older. I always had a passion for photography and video, but I didn't really start it because I was really nervous about what other people would say to me about it. And I wish that I'd started it younger. You know, it's like every business person says that they always wish they'd started younger. And that's definitely a thing that I wished I'd started younger. Like, can you imagine that I'd started everything when I was 18 instead of, you know, 21, 22? I would have had 3 years on everybody else, and it would have pushed me ahead more. And I think that, that's a big one. I think just follow your passion. And I know that sounds corny and so cliche, but I think it's true. Don't worry about what other people think of you, because honestly, it does not matter. It's like, seriously doesn't. Next question is, when are you and Adrian doing a video together? This was asked on the Into the Mind channel. So Adrian and I have done a podcast before on this channel. For those of you that don't know Adrian is a watch enthusiast and business owner. He's incredible. I love him to pieces. The thing about Adrian and I is we both have a lot on. Like, from Adrian's perspective, he has his business, he has his YouTube channel, I think he has two businesses now, and he has a family, and he has two kids. I have the Chisholm Hunter channel, the Into the Mind podcast, my personal channel, and a team that are in the head office that I love to work alongside. So, like, we both have lots on, and coming together is a rare occurrence, but when it does, it's incredible. And, for example, when we went to Banff together, in Canada, that was unbelievable. That was one of the best experiences I've had, just being on the road with him, sharing expertise, talking about family, watches, and everything in between. That was really, really cool. So I think that it will happen eventually. It just, the stars need to align and it will come together. But we do have very similar interests. We're from very similar parts of Scotland, hence why we sound the same and or sound similar. We kind of present in a similar way, which is a bit weird, but yeah, he's a great friend, great mentor, and he's a cool guy. Where do I get my rings? Okay, so my jewelry all comes from Chisholm Hunter. This isn't a plug, although they are the sponsors of the podcast. So I work obviously within Chisholm Hunter. Now, they've been going for like 165 years. And what I love about jewelry is that it tells a story. Each ring that I have tells a story. For example, the one in my left finger, this one, you can actually see, I know that a lot of people that are listening to this won't be able to see it, but it's anodized, and essentially the reason why it looks a little bit black instead of silver is because when I was in Iceland, I took it into a hot tub. This is a really weird story, but within the hot tubs in Iceland, it's heated with volcanic stuff. It essentially runs from the volcanic activity, and that's how they heat their water. And that's why a lot of the water in Iceland smells like farts. It's really rank, but that's why. So it has sulfur in it, and that's why the smell comes around. Now, sulfur reacts with silver in a really weird way, and it oxidizes it. So it essentially turned this ring kind of black. Now, it's fading off a little bit now, but you can still see it. And this ring, forever and always, will remind me of being in Iceland. So, like, it's the same as watches, each ring. This one specifically has a thistle on it, and obviously being Scottish, thistle. So I think that all my jewelry means something, and all of it is from Chisholm Hunter. I think they're the best place to buy jewelry. They're family owned. Definitely go there. I'm not just saying that because I'm a sponsor. I genuinely believe that. So all my jewelry is from Chisholm Hunter, including this chain, actually. I've had a couple of questions about that. It's a St. Christopher chain, so it's the God of Safe Travel, and I travel a lot, and it was a gift from my parents, so it's a nice one. Planning on visiting Scotland for the first time, what activities would you recommend? I also know this gentleman. He's getting married and he's coming to Scotland for his honeymoon. So congratulations. So Scotland is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I think that the Isle of Skye is unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. I've traveled a lot as well. And I honestly think that Scotland is just the top of the top, the creme de la creme of anywhere I've been. The Isle of Skye is beautiful. Old Man of Stour, hiking up there. It's not that hard a hike, and it's just out of this world. Like having a rock formation like that is just so bizarre. It's just like one pointy rock in the middle of nowhere. It's so odd, but it's so majestic and huge that when you're there, you feel like an ant. It's unbelievable. Then you have Talisker's Bay, you have the whiskies, the really cozy bothies and the fires and the pubs, and there's something really different about Scotland. And although Scotland have a shit economic standing at the moment, and there's tons of politicians spouting rubbish left, right, and centre, there is an undeniable beauty about the Scottish people and the coming togetherness of the Scottish people that I'll never get over. And I'm very, very proud to be Scottish because of that. So Isle of Skye is beautiful. Glencoe is beautiful. Also, there's so many stops. If you look up the North Coast 500, which is essentially just the north coast of Scotland, there's so many stops along that route that are just unbelievable. Picturesque beaches as far as the eye can see, and there's nobody there. There's legitimately nobody there. It's bizarre. Like anywhere you go on holiday in the world, Spain, Ibiza, I know those are two really popular spots. Anywhere in Europe, all the beaches are mobbed. In Scotland, none of the beaches are mobbed. It's unbelievable. And then obviously you have the islands, you have Harris, Iona, Mull is really cool, which is where, what's the story in Ballymore? I'm not sure if you guys remember that, but that was actually filmed there on a street in Mull, which is really cool. And there's just a very quaint, cozy feeling to Scotland. And you just don't get it elsewhere. You just don't, especially in England. I just don't feel that, I know I'm saying that because I'm Scottish, but I love England, but I just don't feel there's that togetherness as much as Scotland. I don't know what it is. Maybe that's just my prejudices speaking, but, and I know a lot of the listeners are actually English, but that's how I feel. What is the easiest way to start a podcast? Three person camera mics, how? So I'm guessing you're starting a podcast with three people. So honestly, it's not difficult to start a podcast, and I wouldn't look into it too much. I think that I had kind of a foundation knowledge of video editing and podcasts and mics and all that shit because I did this when I was a lot younger, and I have that foundation. So a lot of the time a podcast is about the content, not the actual capture of the content. And I think that's what people forget. Like if you had an amazing guest, an Elon Musk, and you were recording on DJI mics that clip on, people would still listen to it. Like it's not like the audio quality, although it is important, is the be all and end all. And that's why now we do a lot of digital podcasts, because I love talking to people. And although their audio maybe isn't as great as it's in the studio, you still get a great conversation. So the content is it's better to get the content and then focus on the quality. Like don't try and make it perfect, because it's never going to be perfect. I mean, we were editing a podcast. It would be the podcast before this podcast with someone called Amy Scott, who's Miss Scotland. And there was this really weird echo coming through my mic. And I don't know why it's coming through my mic. I did all the audio tests, and my editor, Caroline, who's amazing, helped me. And we just couldn't figure it out. We spent days on this thing. We couldn't figure out what was wrong with the audio. It doesn't mean we're not going to post the podcast, because people would still listen. The quality is important, but it's not the be all and end all. I think Peter McKinnon said this really incredible quote. It's like, it's better, how did he say it? It's better to, how did he say it? He said something like, it's better doing it than getting it right. Like, it's better getting it done than getting it totally right. It was something along those lines. And when I was first starting content creation, videography, I would focus so much on the details that I just wouldn't post anything. And it's definitely an issue when you kind of grow within the industry. When I was younger, there was nothing holding me back. I wasn't comparing myself to anyone, so I would just post everything. And that was a really nice time in my life, because I didn't really care about I did care about the quality. I wanted to do good work, but I wasn't comparing myself, and I wouldn't withhold stuff because I thought people would judge me for it. Whereas now, I definitely post less because I care more about the quality, and I shouldn't do that. That's not something that I should do. I should post because I want to post, or I should take photography stuff because I want to do photography stuff. Like, I would just try and get like three DJI mics and one camera is all you need. And it doesn't need to be a great camera. It can be like a Canon EOS R. I would just be careful of how long they can actually record for, because if you're recording on a camera that has licensing issues, it won't record for over like half an hour or 29 minutes. So be careful with that. But you honestly don't need a big setup. You really don't. DJI mics, three DJI mics, and connect that to your camera. There you go. Boom. Podcast. And when you get more in depth with your podcast, and also when you know that you're going to commit to your podcast, because a lot of people start these things and then don't continue, then you can start investing in equipment. Then you can start upgrading your mics and upgrading your camera equipment and all that kind of stuff. I think, just to give you an example, I use a Canon EOS R8, which can record for 2 hours. And normally that's typically what a podcast is around. However, I would want longer cameras eventually, but that's me. And then SMB7s or SM7Bs are the mics we're recording on. And this here is a Zoom recorder, which I've got in front of me. And the Zoom recorder is what captures your audio. So you need to sync your audio from your camera to the Zoom recorder. So essentially how you do that is, before you start, you say 3, 2, 1, and then you clap. And in post, you can sync them both up through Premiere Pro or whatever you're using. And that's how we do it. So yeah, you don't need the best mics, the best camera to start. Just start. Whatever it is, the first objection is always the biggest objection. As soon as you get over the first hurdle, you will be on the home stretch. So just do it is my advice there. DJI mics are great. They're actually really good audio for how small they are. And obviously a camera, some kind of cheap camera would be fine. How do you get such amazing colors in your videos and photos? I also know the person that's asked this on my personal channel, my photography channel. So I think a lot of it comes down to just like lighting. I wouldn't say that I'm amazing at editing. If actually anything, I'd say that I'm a bit rubbish at editing comparatively to actually getting the photos and videos. So a lot of it comes down to the natural colors. When you are shooting at sunrise or sunset, it's almost as if the world's natural saturation slider has been turned up. And that's why you get good colors. So shoot at sunrise and sunset. If you look at any of my photography or video, or even watch photography and video, if you're one of the watch guys or girls, you'll see that I try and shoot at very soft light being sunrise, sunset. And I don't really shoot other than that. Maybe I'll shoot if it's cloudy, because then you get a soft blanket and it's kind of like a soft box for the world. But apart from that, I hate shooting in harsh light because it just never looks as good and you get really weird shadows and all that kind of stuff. So I think good color needs to be captured at the point of capture. You can't, if you start adding colors in post, it just looks a little bit fucking weird, if you ask me. Like I try to edit quite naturally. Now, obviously I boost colors and add contrast and all the rest of it, but I try and capture as naturally as possible. And that's why you need to get to the place before everyone gets there early. And that's what I did at the start of my career, as I've spoken about. So try and capture the colors as real as they are, and that'll help you in the post-production. Now, obviously there's edits that you can do. You can use gradients and add warmth and all that kind of stuff. But if you capture the colors at the beginning, it's going to be a lot easier for you. So that's how I do it. I do have select LUTs and presets that I use as well. And I've sold those before, but I took that down because I had too much work to do, but I probably will reignite them. So stay tuned if you want to see them on my personal channel. But my advice there would be try and capture the picture or the video or whatever it is in soft light at sunrise or sunset. That's the best thing to do for sure. How to start? What camera is best for beginners? Lots of photography questions here, and this one's come from the Into the Mind page. I think my camera's actually up here that I started on. I started on it's this one. Actually, I'll get it for you guys. So this right here is the camera that I started on. Well, actually it's not. Technically I had a little digital camera, which is probably sitting down there somewhere. But this is the camera that I my first professional-ish camera. It is a Nikon D3300. D3300, and God, it is old. It's got dust all over it and the lens is tiny and it's so light. God, I used to shoot on that. That's mental. But yeah, that was my first kind of big camera that I got, and I was quite young when I started shooting on that. I think that for beginners, I would go with something relatively cheap. I actually remember a conversation that we had with a guy. Oh, I can't remember his name. That's so rude of me. Terry O'Neill was his name. He was the photographer for David Bowie. He has a ton of unbelievable professional work. And he's really, really famous, or he was really, really famous. He really unfortunately passed away. Now, he actually came to a Chisholm Hunter event in Edinburgh. And as he was at the Chisholm Hunter event, he was going through chemotherapy. So he was very, very sick and he had cancer. And I feel like because he was at that point in his life, he just didn't care. You know, it's a bit like what we came back to earlier. When you're at that point, you are so confident because you know, why wouldn't I be? You know, it's just I'm not going to be here soon. So why wouldn't I be confident? Why wouldn't I trust myself? So because of that, we got a really raw, incredible interview with him. And he was talking about all these awards he's won and all the camera equipment. And somebody in the Chisholm Hunter suite in Edinburgh said, what camera do you suggest for me to use? Like, what would be your suggestion? And he said, to be honest, mate, like, I don't care. I pick the camera that's cheapest and it's totally situational. And that definitely resonated. I think that being at the right place at the right time definitely outweighs the camera. So I think that for your first camera, just get something that's small, point and shoot, and try and be at the right place at the right time. For example, something that came out recently was the guy that had that really famous photo of Donald Trump after the assassination attempt. And it's Donald Trump putting his hand in the air when he was shouting fight and the American flags behind him. One of the most famous photos in history, for sure. That guy was at the right place at the right time. And I'm sure he had a good camera, but it wouldn't have been amazing. And he got the incredible photo because he was at the right place at the right time. So I feel like people can get preoccupied again with the details of the camera, whether something's going to be amazing in low light or not, and blah, 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 blah. it's not the be all and end all, but when you get more advanced in photography, it does matter. Like you need a certain degree of recording. I need to record in 4K because the videos that we upload to YouTube are in 4K. I also like a macro lens because it gets detail of watches that you might not see otherwise. But when you first start, it's more about the process of just getting out there and shooting. And I think that process doesn't involve a really expensive camera. It just involves an entry-level camera. I'm sponsored by Canon. I've got 6 months left in my contract. However, I did shoot Canon prior to being sponsored. I think the Canon EOS R5 is... Canon EOS R5? No, not the Canon EOS R5. The Canon EOS R is a good start because it's quite cheap and it does everything that you need it to do plus more. So Canon EOS R is a good start. However, there's tons of amazing options from Lumix, Nikon, what's the other one? Sony and all the rest of it. So there's so many cameras out there. Okay, I have an eating disorder and I want to get fit and healthy. Advice. Firstly, I'm really sorry to hear that. I'm definitely not the one. I'm not a doctor. I'm not. I can't prescribe you medication. I'm not. I'm not a professional in this area. However, from those that I've spoken to, I have a rough idea. So, I suppose from what you've said, I don't know if you're underweight or overweight. So that's the first. I'll talk about both. So, we've had people in the podcast that are overweight that have lost weight. We've had people in the podcast that were anorexic and they've become very healthy, which is incredible to see. So, I think if you're overweight, it's really taking the small steps to get fitter. And I think having small goals and not totally changing your life, you know, go to the gym twice a week to start. That's it. And maybe go a half an hour walk each time. That's all you need to do. Take the stairs instead of taking the elevator. Instead of getting a carry out, make rice and chicken and broccoli. And those tiny incremental changes will lead to a bigger change in the end. What I see a lot of the time is people going on binges. So like, they'll be very good throughout the week. And then when it comes to Saturday, Sunday, they'll think, oh, well, I've been very good throughout the week. I'm going to eat and drink everything. And then they're just totally back to where they started. Whereas if you make tiny changes throughout the week, then you won't binge on the Saturday, Sunday because you don't feel like you've had that achievement. It's just being normal to you. I think at its core, a calorie deficit is what you need to lose weight. Now, there's going to be so much jargon on the internet about how you can lose weight taking pills and how you can lose weight doing this. And, you know, if you have a sip of lemon water, it's going to stabilize your isotopes and that will make you lose weight. It's all bullshit. Don't listen to it. It's absolute, utter rubbish so that people can sell products. That's it. There's a really good guy online called James Smith, and he kind of just says it how it is. He simplifies everything to the max. If you were overweight, you need to be in a calorie deficit. In order to get in a calorie deficit, maybe 5 days of the week, you don't have breakfast. But on Saturday, Sunday, eat breakfast. Eat what you want. Because sometimes having a fucking, you know, full English or full Scottish breakfast is a lovely thing. Who cares? And because you haven't eaten breakfast for 5 days of the week, you will be more of a calorie deficit than you were before. That's something that you can do. Now, I don't advise to not eat breakfast because I think that it's a very important meal. However, it does create a calorie deficit. So being in a calorie deficit is at its core what loses weight. And it's really simple. There's no other way around it. Now, obviously you can burn more calories if you exercise, and that's the second stage to it. You know, let's say you stop eating junk food and you start eating chicken and rice and broccoli and lots of salmon and be healthy. Then once a week or twice a week, go to the gym. And then you've burnt even more calories. And then you'll start feeling good about yourself. You know, I genuinely feel very unclear. And sometimes I just get a bit depressed when I don't go to the gym. I need to train. It feels good to move your body, to lift weights, to strengthen your muscles, to run. It's fundamental to life. We weren't bred to sit in a room all day. It's not natural. Now, we got to do what we got to do. I've got to edit videos for days on end. I have to sit up there for days on end. You just got to do it. But you always have time. You always have time to get to the gym, to be healthy, to be fit. So get in a calorie deficit and try your best to make the small steps to start getting more fit. And that'll help. If it's the opposite direction, and if it's sort of anorexia you have or an eating disorder that goes the other way, there's podcasts that you can listen to on our channel with unbelievable inspirational people. There's actually a lady, I'm just going to double check. She completed her Ironman, because I know that she was competing in one, and it would be awesome to plug her if she is, because she's just unbelievable. There was a lady called Kirsty MacLeod, and she did. She completed her Ironman. So Kirsty MacLeod is unbelievably inspirational. Now, she had anorexia, and I'm sure she won't mind me talking about this because she does talk about it herself. She had anorexia, and she got over her anorexia and started running Ironmans and all the rest of it. And it's a really, really inspirational story and really heartfelt story. You know, she was very, very ill at one stage. So listening to her podcast might help. And she definitely can help more than I can, because I've never had experience with that. You know, I've never been, on the flip side of an eating disorder. So I think that seeking advice from people that have gone through something similar is definitely what you should do. I would feel uncomfortable giving advice given that I'm not qualified, you know? Okay, the next one. How did you start the CH channel? So CH means Chisholm Hunter, for anyone listening. How did the Chisholm Hunter start? The Chisholm Hunter channel, just to explain for anyone listening, is to do with watches, is watch reviews in a fun way, so to speak. The Chisholm Hunter channel was a total fluke, a total accident. I didn't expect it to get where it is today. It started just after COVID, or maybe during COVID, maybe a year before COVID ended. And it started as just like hands-on reviews of the watches, because I was interested in watches and I liked videography, so they kind of went hand in hand. So I would set the camera up in a tripod, I would film a watch purely, actually, this is so selfish, but purely because I wanted to get the watch into the studio to try it on. Don't tell Chisholm Hunter that, but that's kind of what I wanted to do. So I had this fascination with watches. I got them into the studio and I started posting them online. Now, at the point of posting them online on YouTube, I didn't realize that watches were such a big thing. All of a sudden, the YouTube channel started getting like hundreds of thousands of views a week, which was wild, all because of these reviews I was doing. So the Chisholm Hunter team actually were like, well, why don't you just start going on camera and talking about the watches in a fun way? Sorry, I'm coughing pieces. So yeah, I started doing that. And after a while, it became more of a full-time thing. It got more popular. And then I implemented my videography and photography outdoors style into watch reviews. Watch reviews can be very like basic. I think that anyone can get into a studio and talk about watch. I like to take the watch to the environment in which it's meant to be. So I like going around these outdoorsy places, for example, like Iceland or Finland or Norway, and taking the watch to the environment in which it's meant to be and creating more of an experiential video rather than the just hands-on basic review. There's nothing wrong with them, and we do a lot of them, but I like doing that. I think it adds a layer of experience and fun for the viewer. I think as a viewer, you can click on a car review and you can always see the car being reviewed, but you can't see it in the environment that it's meant to be in. So the kind of idea from my side of things, and this is something that I've wanted to do for years and thankfully it's now coming to fruition, was turning them into what I called the watch vlog. So a vlog with a watch outdoors. And that's how it started. And those began to get really popular, and one thing led to another, and now I'm here. And it's really incredible. I've met so many amazing friends and colleagues and all the rest of it through that channel that all connected through watches and videography. And yeah, it's a really cool thing. I'm really thankful that people like it, actually. It was a wacky idea at the start, and it was definitely a weird one to pitch. You know, when you're going up to the board and saying, I need £5,000 because I'm going to go to Iceland and I'm going to film a watch for a YouTube channel, they're thinking, what the fuck? Like, why would I do that? But thankfully, they were very trusting and listening and gave me the kind of leeway to do what I wanted. And I think it paid off, you know? And I think that people like seeing the watches in the environment they're meant to be in. And they also like the experiential bit. So yeah, I'm very thankful for that. How do I deal with online hate? I liken this to a bar a lot of the times. If you walk into a bar with your pals and there's 100 people in the bar, the odds are one of those people are not going to like you or you are not going to like one of those people. For whatever reason, they might just look a certain way and you think, I don't like you. It's just the way of the world. I think that you always look for the negative comments. And I think that goes back to a primal instinct. If there was, like, let's say hunter-gatherers, you're walking around your village and there's a lion outside your village. That is a threat. That gives you anxiety. That is bad. The problem with social media nowadays is we see these threats from BBC News or, you know, CNN, if you're in America, wherever it is, and you can't do anything about it. And that gives us a lot of anxiety. And because of this kind of instinct, we naturally gravitate towards negative stuff. So on our YouTube videos, at the moment, we might get 300 comments. And one of those comments says that I have a shit hairline and a big nose and I'm ugly. I always gravitate to those mean, horrible comments, even though the vast majority, over 98% or 99% are positive. It's just a human instinct. So I think that, listen, I've had a lot of hate online and I've never had one person come up to me that's been horrible. Everyone that recognizes me from the Chisholm Hunter channel or from my personal channel or from the podcast, which is becoming more regular, weirdly, is absolutely unbelievable and very, very kind. And they just want to say hi. And that kind of says it all. I mean, people that sit behind a screen and are getting angry at somebody for doing a review. Firstly, why don't you just click off the video and not watch it if it pisses you off that much? And secondly, they're definitely not comfortable within themselves. They have to bring someone else down. And that's what makes them feel good. And I feel kind of sorry for that. I feel like that's not a happy person. If I clicked in a video and I didn't like the video, I would click off of the video and watch something else. I wouldn't comment saying you're a piece of shit. And the rugby guys that we've got on, I know that we spoke to Doohan van der Merwe about this. He had a couple of things that went wrong during a game. And you had people from all around the globe saying you're absolute shit. You know, you shouldn't be on the rugby team. There's a reason that he's on the rugby team and they're not. And there's a reason that they have the time to comment on his posts and he doesn't have the time to comment on their posts. So I think that you need to see it from both perspectives. The person that's commenting is clearly very, very sad. And it's not that deep. You know, like, probably 99% of the people like you, but you just magnify in on that 1% that don't. I think my advice, to kind of cap that, my advice would be to not read them. It got to a point on my personal channel, the HB Lifelines channel, which I think we were getting like I got 9 million views or 10 million views on one reel. And obviously out of 10 million people, you're gonna get hundreds of people that hate you for no reason. And I had to turn the comments off. I couldn't deal with the influx of comments. And naturally you gravitate towards the most negative ones. So I just totally turned the comments off and that helps. My rule normally is that within the first 10 minutes of a video posting, I'll reply to everyone that's in the comments because normally the people that are waiting for the video are very nice people. So I'll reply to them as much as I can and try and have a chat with them. And then I turn it off and then I leave it. That's my advice. If you could have a round table with multiple guests, who would be on it? And what would you want to talk about? Wow. Elon Musk, Peter McKinnon, and Joe Rogan. I think that Joe Rogan would offer the conspiracy theories. That'd be awesome. Elon Musk would get involved, but he's also just super smart. So he'd tell you how it is. And Peter McKinnon is just an awesome guy that I'd love to learn from and love to meet. Because he's kind of an inspiration. So they'd be really cool. They'd be a really cool bunch of people, bunch of guests. What podcasts have you been inspired by? I enjoy Joe Rogan's podcast. I know that's kind of a hot topic at the moment, but I think that he's unbelievable in his work ethic. I mean, he's doing 3 full-time jobs that are extremely highly paying, plus more, plus he owns a business, plus he owns a comedy club, plus he has the biggest podcast in the world, plus he's a trained UFC fighter, plus he's a presenter. Like, the guy's work ethic is off the charts. And a lot of what he says is sense, although people don't want to believe it. You know, if you are feeling mentally not great, you know, try and exercise, try and go to the gym. And that's just what he tries to encourage people to do. I don't think that he's toxically masculine. I think that he just gives his opinion and it pisses a section of people off. And, you know, that's all he does. So definitely him. What other podcasts? I enjoy some of the comedic podcasts that I shouldn't. I enjoy Kill Tony. It's so funny. And it's the biggest live podcast in the world now. It's awesome. It's so funny. When I was actually in Iceland, recently I was traveling into the Iceland Highlands, and what I didn't plan for, again, this is like a common theme in my trips, is that I was by myself and I had this big 4x4 car, and I didn't plan for the amount of driving that would be involved each day. So I was driving 9 hours a day, legitimately 9 hours a day. It was mental. And I would listen to so much Kill Tony. It's unbelievable because it was so funny. And it brings humor to dark situations. And I think sometimes that's what you need. And a lot of these comedians get canceled because they take it maybe too far. But I mean, freedom of speech, I don't really believe in cancel culture. I feel like people should have a long form conversation and find common ground instead of just canceling the other side. But that's just my opinion. How do you motivate yourself in the low points? I think just realizing how lucky I am to be here, to be alive and to have a platform and to have the skill set that I do and that I've developed and to have my health, to have my family. I'm a very lucky, lucky man. I'm a very lucky person. So, just, you know, coming down to reality, no, it kind of goes back to that health thing. Like if you get ill, nothing else really matters. Like see, if you strip everything back, you know, what really matters in life is your family, your friends, and your partner and kids if you have them. That's kind of it. Like if I lost the YouTube channel and, you know, my photography gear and everything, I still have the knowledge. Like it doesn't, it's a pain in the arse, but it doesn't really matter. So I think just kind of bringing yourself back to reality sometimes. You know, what really matters to you? Do you still have your parents? Are you lucky enough to have your parents with you? Are you lucky enough to have your children? Lucky enough to have your wife? Practicing gratitude every day can be very, very beneficial. I also definitely need exercise. I definitely need to go to the gym at least once a day. And that motivates me. That definitely gives me clarity. I think having an ADHD brain, I got diagnosed when I was quite young with dyslexia and ADHD. So like my brain's always quite like, it jumps around a lot and I really struggle to focus on certain things. And like there's things that I'm not interested on just won't get done. Things that I am interested on, I will hyper-focus to the max. But my brain can be really loud, especially when I go to sleep. And like, I can't stop. And I can't take the medication. Like that makes me into a zombie. So I think, I can't remember where I was going with that at all. You know that? Yeah, I think that's where I was going. So I think the exercise definitely gives me the clarity. So I think I need exercise to motivate myself, and I need to see figures to motivate myself as well. Like I feel like you need to measure something in order to see that it's successful. And if it's not, you pivot and try something new. You know, if we were doing this podcast and we were getting no views, there wouldn't be a feasible reason to keep doing the podcast. And it's not that I don't, like, I to be honest, this is more of a passion, so I probably would do it for free. But if you have a business and it's not profitable, you probably need to stop doing the business if it's losing a lot of money, you know? So seeing figures and targeting yourself based on those figures, having a 3-month, 6-month, year plan is healthy. And I think you need to do that to keep yourself moving forward. If you could have a conversation with anyone from the past, who would it be? Oh. Maybe my gran, maybe my grandpa on both my mum and my dad's side. I think, oh my God, that's a good question. Jesus. I honestly, Tara O'Neill is definitely another one that I would love to see again and have a conversation with. I think my family, I think my grandparents would be up there, you know, speaking to them one last time. I remember speaking to my parents, I think it was my dad specifically, and he was saying, you know, if I could see my mum for one day, just like one day, that's all I would want. I would sell everything. I'd sell everything and start again because family's everything. Like you don't, yeah, I think family, you know. I think it gives you a sense of mortality when people go and when people pass away. So I think that having my family there, you know, my grandparents would be amazing to talk to and pick their brains for another day. And when someone goes, you always think of all the shit that you should have said. And it gives you a real sense of life and what's important. So I think that, yeah, my grandparents would be incredible. But listen, guys, I've waffled for so long. I'm so sorry if I didn't get your Q&A or Q or you know whatever. I'm really, really sorry. I hope this has helped in some way. If it has, please hit that subscribe button or, you know, follow button, whatever it is. And I'll see you guys in the next podcast, which should be on Sunday.